Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you've been paying attention, you know it's been an uncomfortable few months for the NYPD. New Jersey police officers and the FBI discovered that the armed robbery of a perfume warehouse was the work of several NYPD officers. Then there's the racial slurs made by an officer who is now accused of fabricating charges against an African-American man. Corrupt narcotics officers and a gun smuggling ring are also tarnishing the reputation of New York's finest. This is all on the heels of a report about the NYPD's questionable counterterrorism strategies. And in the Bronx, a ticket-fixing scandal has painted the NYPD as a force where favors are made and treatment is unequal. Commissioner Ray Kelly responded to the claims of a ticket-fixing culture last month.
Those actions are crimes under the law and can't be glossed over as courtesies or as part of an acceptable culture. They are not.
So to what extent is there a culture of ticket fixing among the ranks of the NYPD, and does it matter? How about culture of trouble in general with all these things piling up on each other? Joining me now is WNYC's Elsa Chang, who's been speaking to current and former police officers about the practice. Hey, Elsa.
Hi.
There are 123 precincts in the NYPD. Let's point that out. 34,000 officers, roughly. To what extent is there any unifying culture or practice when it comes to ticket fixing, which was discovered in the Bronx?
That's a great question. I mean, the PBA president, the Patrolman's Benevolent Association president, this is the police union president, Pat Lynch, said that there was an NYPD culture that condoned ticket fixing. But this week, as I was talking to several retired officers across the city, I was struck by how people chafed under that broad brushstroke, and that it's a lot more complicated than that. A lot of the folks I talked to admitted, these are officers who worked in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in New York City, admitted that they fixed tickets. But they said that they knew they were doing something wrong and that they would do it covertly in instances when they weren't directed by supervisors to fix tickets. You know, whether it was defacing a ticket on its face, putting incorrect information on a ticket to make it defective and therefore invalid in court, because they knew that they would get administratively punished or reprimanded by their supervisors if they were caught. In cases where officers were caught perjuring themselves on the stand in traffic court, they would lose their jobs. So there wasn't this unfettered, unabashed, unapologetic, freewheeling ticket-fixing culture. Now, what complicates it is I also talked to officers who said they were ordered by their supervisors to fix tickets as favors to city council members, people from the mayor's office. And so if they saw their bosses grant favors to people, they thought it wasn't that much of a stretch for them to do it on their own, for their cousins, friends, etc.
If anybody wants to get in on this on the phones, you can. Maybe police officers are listening. Or if you have ties to the NYPD or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. A ticket-fixing culture or institutional problems on the rise in general in a third term of Bloomberg and Kelly, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Elsa, you discovered that the NYPD patrol guide does allow for voiding summonses as long as they were first issued in error.
That's
you spoke
right.
with several former police officers about ticket fixing, including Joe Gagliardo.
Gagliardo. Or Joe Gag, for short.
Joe Gag. Do you want to set up this gag clip for us?
Sure. Joe Gagliardo was a police officer in Brooklyn in the 70s and 80s, I believe. I've talked to so many officers at this point. But what was interesting in Joe's case is he distinctly remembers an instance where he was ordered by supervisors to fix a ticket for the chief of staff of a city council member. And this is how he describes being ordered to do that.
I was told the guy's the chief of staff for a council member. Yeah. Well, you wrote him a ticket. Yeah. You got to take care of it. Well, how am I supposed to take care of it? Hey, kid, just change the date of birth and don't worry about it.
So Joe said he did what he was told. He, you know, fudged with what was on the ticket to make it defective and therefore invalid. And he was rewarded for fixing tickets in instances like that. He actually got a job detail that he really wanted. He wanted to be on anti-crime, and he got that gig.
So Commissioner Kelly, as we heard, says there's no culture and no defense for ticket fixing. Why are you asking the question this way? Does it matter if there's a culture or not?
Well, it was so interesting to see the anger. If you were at the Bronx County Supreme Courthouse last Friday, there was so much anger among these hundreds of police officers gathering in support, or at least rallying about, you know, why are we the ones getting in trouble for ticket fixing when everybody did it, including supervisors? That's one argument. And then another argument was, okay, fine. You know, we know that people have been punished administratively for ticket fixing, but this is the first time anyone's been actually indicted for it, facing possible jail sentences for it. And if you are really going to take it to that level, then Ray Kelly, you should have issued an internal order in the department to make it totally clear that ticket fixing is no longer permissible. Now, people have argued and are still arguing, well, we all know it's against the rules, against the law. Why do police officers need a reminder about following the law? But, you know, a lot of these officers says when your supervisors are telling you to fix tickets in certain instances, ordering you to, sometimes what the law is may not really matter.
John in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Active officer, John, right?
That's correct.
We really appreciate you calling in.
Hi. I just want to point out it has gone on for a number of years since I've been on the job, 20 years. It was 20 years before when my father was on the job. And it's not a crime. We never thought of it as a crime. And I just think it's a witch hunt. And all the way up to the top has done it.
What do you think the rules and the enforcement should be, John?
I mean, it's always been a courtesy. What should it be? I mean, obviously, I'm not endorsing what that Officer Ramos did, anything like that. But if it's a minor infraction, you do have a discretion to give a summons or not.
You want that kid to grow up and be a second-generation cop?
My son, yeah.
Good. He sounds really cute. John, thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
And so do you think that represents a pervasive attitude on the force, that this is a witch hunt, and whatever this is, it's not a crime?
I think people are conflicted about it. They know that what they were doing is wrong. But what they take issue with, at least the officers I talked to, the non-ranking officers I talked to, is that the department as a whole, a lot of people in the department did it from all different levels. And you don't see supervisors getting indicted. You don't see supervisors getting called out for ticket fixing. Now, I did talk to one incredibly high-ranking former commanding officer in the NYPD, Louis Anamone, who's the former chief of department of the NYPD during the mid-90s to the late 90s, which means he's the highest-ranking uniformed officer in the entire police force during that time. And he says he voided 100 tickets during his time on the NYPD. But he says there's a distinction. Not all types of ticket fixing are equal. He would follow the NYPD patrol guide, which requires that a tremendous amount of paperwork, that you write void across the summons, and you still have to retain copies of the original summons. It does generate an incredible amount of paperwork. But he told me that, you know, a lot of the guys, a lot of the officers that I commanded probably saw their captains, including me, voiding fistfuls of tickets and thought to themselves, well, if Anamone can do favors for people, then why can't I, without generating all that paperwork?
Elsa Chang on the police beat here at WNYC News. And also joining us now is Richard Aborn, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, which has issued a report on NYPD oversight and how it happens in the next five largest police departments in the country as well. He and the CCC, which is a kind of law enforcement think tank, are advocating for subpoena power and encouraging the NYPD to strengthen the culture of oversight within the department. Aborn was also assistant Manhattan DA under Robert Morgenthau and ran for DA in 2009, losing to Cy Vance. Hi, Richard. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Always good to be with you.
So give us an overview. What kind of oversight is there for the NYPD?
Well, interestingly, we have to know that the NYPD is by far the largest police department in the country. If you were to combine the next three largest departments, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Philly, they would not even reach the size of the NYPD. Yet each of those departments has very vigorous oversight mechanisms, and they have what I think are the gold standards of oversight. They are independent of the department. They are transparent. They have compulsory power, meaning they have subpoena power, and they are permanent. And the NYPD doesn't have any of that. So we have to strengthen the oversight mechanism. It's a shame that this is rising up in the context of these various scandals, but it is these sorts of issues that bring this matter into focus. Even if this were not going on, the department should still have some oversight, and it's time for us to finally do that.
And your report states that the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is supposed to provide some independent oversight, routinely reports having trouble getting requested documents or getting interviews even with police officers. So what would help?
So I think we need to do a couple of things. I think we need to set up an agency outside of the department, appointed by whatever mechanism the city council, the mayor thinks best, that has the power to compel documents, in other words, has subpoena powers, is a transparent agency, meaning it publishes reports on a regular basis. It sends a message to the department, including the head of the department, that people are watching what they're doing, and has the power to review not only criminality, of course, but also practices. So, for instance, there is a very large debate in town about whether or not the NYPD is using stop and frisk too much. Well, the shame of that conversation is that the conversation has now become, should we use it or shouldn't we use it? When the reality is we should use it, but it's got to be used properly. We need oversight in order to make sure it's used properly. There was a big discussion about the RNC convention. We need oversight to make sure that kind of thing happens properly, or the arrests that are taking place down on Wall Street. An oversight mechanism can get us rapidly to all of those issues. If we don't have oversight, what we end up with is oversight by litigation, if you will, which means public interest lawsuits are filed by groups, and that takes years to come to fruition, and it's very expensive. Those are all lost opportunities.
Elsa?
Yeah, and I just want to add that when you have weak oversight bodies, it sends a message to people who feel that they've been violated by police officers, that there's nowhere to go, and they don't even bother to make complaints. I'm not saying that the CCRB is necessarily weak, but look at the numbers. The Civilian Complaint Review Board, in the stop and frisk investigation that I did earlier this year, they received more than 1,000 complaints of illegal searches during stop and frisks. And out of those 1,000 complaints or so, only about 3% of officers were actually disciplined. And in most of those cases, all that happened to them was they lost vacation days. So that sends a message to people that it doesn't matter if you make a complaint.
And you also spoke with Roy Richter, president of the Union for Police Captains and higher-ranking officers, about the kinds of penalties these officers in the Bronx are facing, which is jail time. Listen.
All of a sudden, we're going from administrative penalties to criminal penalties, and that's the unfairness of the indictments in the Bronx.
Exactly. Roy Richter says, sure, people have gotten administrative penalties for instances of ticket fixing before, but no one ever dreamed that you get indicted, criminally indicted for it. Whoa, now that's a different message.
Which is the same thing our first caller raised. Richard Aborn?
Well, that's exactly right. And a lot of this is about messaging. And the message you have to send is that this kind of corruption or this kind of misuse of power will not be tolerated. And one of the ways you do that is by telling the department and, very importantly, the public, that there is this transparency around what they do. And one of the other things that we absolutely have to do is make sure that the funding mechanism for any oversight body that's set up is permanent and is fixed to something. We cannot get into a situation where a mayor can simply defund or reduce the funding of the oversight mechanism. So if we have an oversight mechanism, the budget should be a percentage, some small percentage, but a percentage of the overall budget of the NYPD, and that should be fixed by statute.
Elliot in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elliot. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. A couple things. First of all, I lived in California and San Francisco for 9 years. I had a friend of mine who was a traffic officer. He was a motorcycle cop. His job was to stop traffic violators. I had carried a card, his business card, said Elliot, personal friend. I used it twice in my 9 years, and the ticket was never issued. So this is a culture of police departments across the country. I came back here in the 90s.
Whoops.
Now, 10 cards per officer with their number on it, plus they can order additional cards if they want. but so does the Detectives Endowment Association, Sergeants Benevolent Association, Lieutenants Benevolent Association, and the Superior Officers Benevolent Association. So this is an absolute culture that has been around since these unions started issuing these cards, and the first one I ever saw was one my father had in the 1960s.
Elliot, thank you very much. And Richard, I guess this goes to your report, which compared police oversight in various cities.
You know, that's exactly right. And undoubtedly, there are cops, not only just in New York, but in other cities that fix tickets. But this is beyond just ticket fixing. How do we get to the stop and frisk questions that have been raised for so long? How do we get to these issues about whether or not police precincts are accepting complaints? Remember, about a year ago, there was a very large debate in town about whether or not police precincts were accepting complaints because they were afraid that if people reported crimes, their CompStat numbers would go up. How do we ensure that the auditing that the NYPD does is vigorous, is accurate, is transparent? There are just a broad series of issues that an oversight agency could address on an ongoing basis. Oversight is a core component of democratic policing. That is a very well-established principle. And ironically, New York, which I believe has one of the best, most effective police departments in the country, and the crime data shows that, this is an unimaginably safe city compared to where we were 15, 20 years ago. But we lack the oversight that is needed. And again, unfortunately, it rises in the context of scandal. But if you were to sit down and design the NYPD from the beginning, you would certainly build in an oversight mechanism to it. That's the conversation we should have.
From our comments page, Quincy from Bed-Stuy writes, "This issue reminds me of the adage from The Wire that refers to fecal gravity. It always rolls downhill. Perhaps supervisors should take responsibility instead of pulling rank." And Sheldon from Brooklyn writes, "Cops never write tickets on each other. For every ticket that's fixed, there are 30 that are never even written." Before you both go, I want to touch on the fact that this investigation into ticket fixing, as well as some of the other things that have been revealed about some internal problems, being overseen by outside entities and dug up by outside entities. The Queens DA uncovered the case of corrupt narcotics investigators. Police officers were convicted in September of armed robbery, and that case was uncovered by New Jersey police and the FBI. And yet I'm kind of surprised, Elsa. Wouldn't there be a disincentive for DAs to break open NYPD corruption and make these criminal cases because they need police cooperation so badly to get their convictions?
I think that's certainly an incentive. And although we have, well, let's bring it back to ticket fixing, if I may, because I think it's a really good example. There's an interesting situation going on where we see the Bronx DAs coming out in full force with a ticket fixing prosecution, but none of the four other district attorneys in the city are touching the ticket fixing case so far. And it's unclear why that is. Now, there are rumors, speculation that it's because a lot of witnesses they need are officers who could be accused of ticket fixing. They don't want to mess with their pending cases. It could be that there's so far insufficient evidence in those other counties of ticket fixing, but that seems hard to believe since we're talking about how ticket fixing has been prevalent across the city for decades. It could be that the investigations are still pending and we may see charges in the future. But there certainly are incentives for prosecutors to make sure that at least their pending cases aren't interfered with too much. But I think that they would certainly push at any insinuation that they are refraining from making or going forward with prosecutions just to protect certain cop witnesses.
But Richard Aborn, last thing. If these outside law enforcement agencies are digging up the problems in the NYPD, does it mean that internal affairs just isn't being aggressive or serious enough?
And your question perfectly frames the need for oversight. We would know the answer to that if we had an oversight mechanism. We shouldn't have to speculate about that. The Internal Affairs Bureau is an incredibly important function of this police department. We need to have the ability to audit what they're doing, to examine what they're doing, to understand what they're doing, and be transparent about that, of course, without compromising any investigations that they're doing. Yeah. But those things are not mutually incompatible. We can achieve both.
Richard Aborn, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, has a report on NYPD oversight and how it compares to the next five largest police departments in the country. WNYC's Elsa Chang has a new report on ticket fixing and the culture of the NYPD. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the best new words of the last 10 years from the new edition of the American Heritage Dictionary. From F-bomb to spaghettification and much more. Stay tuned.